This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
According to the Canadian Mental Health Association, agoraphobia means fear of open spaces, but it's often a behavioral response to panic attacks. Agoraphobia is the most common phobic disorder and is also the most disabling. A major factor of agoraphobia is fear of fear itself, and an individual may become panic-stricken when confronted with his or her fears. There may be an avoidance of public spaces such as streets, stores, and public transportation. Some people may become afraid of remaining alone. Mental health professionals are becoming much more knowledgeable about agoraphobia and are now better able to diagnose it. Once diagnosed, agoraphobia is treatable.
I spoke with registered psychologist Melanie Badali earlier this week to find out more.
Melanie, agoraphobia has been explored in a whole range of movies, and I just found some samples online. An eccentric agoraphobic heroin addict obsessed with his garden. An agoraphobic children's book illustrator trapped inside her home by people who terrorize her. A woman juggling between raising her young daughter, caring for her agoraphobic mother and her career. A single father suffering from chronic agoraphobia since the day his wife was attacked. But my guess is that if you asked anyone at random to explain what agoraphobia actually is, there wouldn't be a very coherent explanation. What are your thoughts? Are there any misconceptions about agoraphobia that we can deal with right now?
Yes, I think you bring up some really good points. Agoraphobia involves anxiety or fear of and avoidance of situations or places where escape might be difficult or where help might not be available if you have a panic attack. And when you're talking to a psychologist or if you're talking to your family physician or a psychiatrist, when we talk about agoraphobia, we're usually also talking about something that goes along with panic attacks. And sometimes in the media, that piece is missing. In one of the examples you mentioned, someone who had some fear after their wife was attacked. Well, there, you know, if I was doing an assessment of that person, I'd be wanting to know, is this agoraphobia or is this some form of post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD? So one of the things that usually comes up when I see a client is trying to figure out, is this in fact agoraphobia? Is there panic attacks that happen? Has this been what has led them to start avoiding so many situations? If you look at just the definition of agoraphobia, some people will say it's a fear of open spaces. And, you know, in practice, it's usually a lot more. And really, when you're talking to most clinicians, they will be talking about agoraphobia as it is associated with panic disorder. It's very, very rare to actually see someone who only has agoraphobia without the panic symptoms.
One of the things that I've come across in looking at this whole range of movies and books and things like that is that people with agoraphobia are often described as eccentric or odd or unusual, and there's a whole element of some kind of a humor that goes with it, but it strikes me that it is not a humorous condition at all.
You know, to be honest, I haven't found that to be true in my experience dealing with clients who have agoraphobia. Certainly that is something that you see in, a media portrayal, but not something I personally experienced. I think what might happen is if you have someone who has severe agoraphobia and is not, you know, used to leaving their home and you see them outside of their home, you might perceive them to be acting oddly because they might be acting oddly. Their behavior might be odd because they're really uncomfortable. They're enduring whatever situation they're in with dread. This doesn't mean if you met them in whatever their comfort zone is, maybe that would be their own home. For some people, that's their own home and their own workplace. You know, it really depends on how severe the situation is. You might not find them to be odd at all. So one of the things that might be happening is people are misinterpreting those behaviors that are actually associated with anxiety and distress as odd.
Have you observed either an increase in agoraphobia generally in, let's say, people approaching you for help, or at a minimum an increase in awareness about agoraphobia?
I haven't noticed an increase in the numbers of agoraphobia, the prevalence rates, but I do think more people are reaching out for help. I think one thing that's really helped facilitate that is technology. So somebody who might be afraid to leave their house to seek help can now, you know, call our clinic, for example, and say, you know, do you have any telehealth sessions available and things like that. So I think technology is breaking down barriers to the treatment of agoraphobia.
Now, how can you mentioned telehealth. How can someone with agoraphobia, let's say severe agoraphobia, who is trapped, so to speak, in their home, access help if they're afraid to leave their home?
You know, one of the things, unfortunately, in the Canadian system is there's a difference between what's available publicly and what's available, you know, if you're able to private pay. I think in terms of access for anybody, there's a lot of great self-help materials or bibliotherapy available out there. And as I'm on the board of directors for Anxiety BC, I would definitely direct people first to anxietybc.com. We have a section explaining panic disorder and panic disorder with agoraphobia and lots of great self-help strategies. And so people could start there in their own home just by educating themselves, by learning about anxiety. I think one thing that may be helpful is that piece that you might need to look under panic disorder on some of the available public health websites, because agoraphobia is often listed under panic disorder or associated with that. So that might be one thing for people to be aware of, but there's great self-help materials out there, and the research shows, you know, good results from bibliotherapy, as it does from telehealth for panic disorder and panic disorder with agoraphobia. So that's definitely good news for people.
So what can be done then to decrease or eliminate agoraphobic symptoms in the sense of counseling or treatment? What are the approaches that are used?
I can speak to psychological treatments, and the most efficacious psychological treatment is a type of therapy called cognitive behavior therapy. Cognitive is just a fancy word for thinking, you know, for your thoughts. Behavior is what you do. And it's one of those sort of, it's kind of a weird name for therapy, because most people come to therapy for the emotion, anxiety, sadness, anger. That's where the suffering comes from. So when they see the name cognitive behavior therapy, it's kind of like, well, I don't know about that. But what we know is that looking at people's thinking patterns and looking at what they're doing and changing those up a little bit, or a lot in some cases, can really, really help people. So one of the things about agoraphobia is that their fear of whatever the spaces are, whether it's, you know, modes of transportation, open spaces, being in shops, standing in line or being in a crowd, being outside their home, public transportation, whatever it is, their anxiety is out of proportion. So their interpretation of the threat of that situation is out of proportion to the actual risk involved. If there was a bear chasing down the street after you and you had, you know, a full-blown panic attack, or you were trying to avoid that situation, that makes sense. You want that type of response. It's adaptive. But what's happening with people with panic disorder with agoraphobia, or just with agoraphobia, is they're having that full-blown response to danger when there isn't actually any danger or much danger at all. So it's kind of like a smoke alarm going off for burnt toast instead of going on when your house is on fire. You want that smoke alarm there. It's useful. It's helpful. But you don't want it just, you know, going off every 2 seconds.
Is agoraphobia considered to be a disability?
Yes. I mean, if you are diagnosed with agoraphobia and it meets sort of the criteria for causing distress and causing disturbance in occupational and social functioning, then usually people would call that a disability. It just depends on what your definition of disability is. But Usually the fear, anxiety, or the avoidance of things causes clinically significant distress or impairment. You know, some people will report if they never leave their house, they're not having these intense anxiety reactions or panics, but their world gets limited in other ways. So maybe they're not having as many panic attacks because they're never leaving their house, but they're also not leading, you know, maybe the full rich life that they want to be leading. In other cases, there are people who are leaving the house a lot, but when they're out there, they're enduring their anxiety with, you know, dread, and it's really, really uncomfortable for them.
It sounds, though, that it would be accurate to say there's no quick fix for either an anxiety disorder or an agoraphobic situation.
Anxiety, managing anxiety is really about managing anxiety. You know, anxiety to a certain degree is normal. We all have anxiety from time to time. It's just that for some people, it kind of goes on overdrive and it stops being helpful to them. And so it's not like we want to get rid of anxiety or you know, certainly it would be helpful if there's, you know, a car racing down at you, or I live on the North Shore, so I usually use a lot of bear examples. You want it. It's helpful for, you know, getting people to pay attention to the dangers in the environment. You just don't want it to start ruling your life. You want to learn how to manage it. And managing it, it's a skill. And there are some studies that show good results and good changes for panic disorder in as little as 6 one-hour sessions. There are, you know, good results for reading self-help materials. So people can learn skills that will help them. But, yeah, usually it's a process.
Dr. Melanie Badali, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'd just like to say that, you know, help is available and a good place to start, especially if you do have trouble leaving your home, is the anxietybc.com website. For those people who prefer to listen to cool radio podcasts, we actually have an in-conversation series of 5 podcasts also on our website. So it's not just text. There's videos and there's podcasts and there's we even have an app for youth. So there's lots of really cool stuff on our website. So I would say that is a good place to start, as well as going to see your family doctor. They can usually help point you towards good resources.
Thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Dr. Melanie Badali is a registered psychologist specializing in the assessment and treatment of stress, anxiety, depression, and low self-esteem. She practices at North Shore Stress and Anxiety Clinic in North Vancouver. Melanie is also a board member at Anxiety BC. You can find them online at anxietybc.com.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.